Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 47 of Dogcast Radio. This episode is a food special. With so many recalls of dog food lately, what are the alternatives? We hear from expert Kim Bloomer.
We've had people say, so when will it be safe again to feed the food? And my answer to that would be, it never was, so it never will be.
We have the success story of OrganiPets.
About 4 years ago, she was diagnosed with cancer and given 6 months to live. And we thought, well, however long she's got, we want to make sure it's a good quality of life. So I started making her organic food at home.
We have a great short story from author Shaundra Miller.
She calls us Red and Shaggy, and we don't mind a bit. Our names are Jessie and Duchess, but Red and Shaggy work just as well.
And before all that, we have puppy playtime.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime. Hi, and welcome to puppy playtime. This time, I have some great doggy books for you. One of my favourite authors, who's written a lot of books featuring dogs, is Dick King Smith. He wrote The Invisible Dog, which I enjoyed reading. It's about a girl called Janie who wants a Great Dane, but her parents think they can't afford all the vets and food bills. Janie finds Rupert's lead, her mum and dad's dog who died, and starts to pretend that there is a Great Dane on the end of the lead. The only person that is able to see the dog is Janie and apparently old Mrs. Garrow, a neighbour. You'll have to read the book yourself to find out if Janie is just imagining her dog and whether she ever gets a real Great Dane. Another interesting Dick King Smith book is The Guard Dog. In this story, a mongrel is for sale in a pet shop, but no one wants to buy him due to the horrible noise he makes when anyone is near his cage. Will he ever get an owner, or will he stay in the pet shop forever? Read it and see for yourself. Puppy Playtime listener Ella has a book review with her own recommendations for you now.
Hello, my name is Ella, and I'm here to review two books for Puppy Playtime. The first book that I reviewed for Puppy Playtime is called The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. And the author is Mark Haddon. 15-year-old Christopher has a photographic memory. He understands maths, science. Did I say maths? But one thing he doesn't understand are other human beings. At 7 minutes past midnight, he finds his neighbour's dog dead in her garden. At that very moment, he decides to track down the killer and write a murder mystery novel about it. He finds out who killed him, but what else will he uncover? My rating for this book is 8 out of 10. I would have given it 10 out of 10. I didn't, though, because there is a lot of swearing in the book. My age rating for this book is 10 years old and over. Now, for the second book that I reviewed, it's a lot more cheerful, and it's called Olga Follows Her Nose, and the author is Michael Bond. He has also written Paddington Bear. Olga Topolga is no ordinary guinea pig. She's a very special guinea pig, and she knows it. During this story, she finds a puzzle that looks good enough to eat, and an animal finds her looking good enough to eat, and she also gets hypnotises herself in a mirror. Along with her friend, she gets up to her eyes in mischief. My rating for this book is 10 out of 10. I gave this book 10 out of 10 because it is very humorous and exciting at times. And my age rating for this book is as soon as you learn to read a book. Now, that was my two reviews for Puppy Playtime. Back to you, Jenny.
Thanks, Ella, for those great reviews. I have enjoyed reading some of the books in the Puppy Patrol series. These are written by Jenny Dell and are about Neil and his sister Emily, whose parents run King Street Kennels and also a dog training class. The whole family absolutely love dogs, and this affection involves them in some interesting situations. The 100-mile-an-hour dog by Jeremy Strong is funny and easy to read. Streaker is a dog with a problem. As the title suggests, she can run 100 miles an hour, so needs some careful training from her owner. Till next time, have fun reading and make sure your dog has fun with you.
Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, feed Jake. Pirates of the Mississippi. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. There have been serious problems in recent months with some commercial dog food brands. Many owners have resorted to homemade food, but some experts are warning us that we have to ensure our dog's nutritional needs are met. What is a well-intentioned dog owner to do? For informed, practical advice, I turn to Kim Bloomer. Kim is one of the presenters of Animal Talk Naturally, and the first thing we talked about was the journey that brought Kim to her present interest in pet nutrition.
I worked in veterinary medicine for many years, and so I got, you know, that end of, you know, how to care for animals. And but my own nutrition journey for human health has been a long time coming. I went to the University of New Mexico, and so as a dance major there, nutrition was critical for our own, you know, performance ability.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seemed like I never looked into animal health for a long time. But I more recently started going to a college here in the United States, the Clayton College of Natural Health. And that's really opened my eyes to animal health. But I think it's just because of the dog who lives in my life, who came into my life 8 years ago. He is the reason why I do natural, you know, look into nutrition for animals and for people. But I am going to school studying holistic nutrition and subsequently my Doctor of Naturopathy. And fortunately, Dr. Hubbard with the American Veterinary Naturopathic Association has then said he will be happy to put me into the doctorate program at the American College of Veterinary Naturopathy. So, and you know, to me, health is all about nutrition.
Yes.
You start with nutrition. And so that's been my journey. And that's, and I will tell everybody, your audience, that that is just trial and error with my own animals and my own health, and knowing and doing lots and lots of reading and research, and then applying what I learn and seeing how it works for my own body and for my animals. I really think it's an individual thing, but I really think that if you care about the body you live in, if you care about your animal's body, you're going to want to do your due diligence and homework. And really, it's just been a lifelong journey for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, heaven knows we've had enough problems recently with commercially produced food.
So yeah. And I don't know, you guys aren't having recalls over there, are you?
No, not yet. No.
Not yet. Yeah, we'll keep fingers crossed that it won't.
I know, there's been horrendous problems, haven't there?
Yeah, in this country it's been really, you know, and I think it's been a long time coming. As a matter of fact, the other day I was doing some research on, I was going through my blogs, you know, and looking at, and I went, wait a minute, we had a recall just a couple of years ago and a big one. How come we're having another one? I've done my homework more recently just because of an article that my co-host and I are writing for Animal Wellness Magazine. And one of the things that I discovered was that that they are putting less and less protein into these foods for our dogs and cats. They need protein. They're putting plant protein in there, but they're not vegetarians.
No.
Dogs and cats aren't vegetarians, so it's not going to work for them. So it's no wonder there have been recalls.
Yeah.
It's no wonder that they're getting sicker, the animals. And it's no wonder that, you know, the more that they try to put cheap ingredients into these products for a greater yield, no wonder we're having these problems. And I would suspect that there's going to be more. And personally, I would never go back to feeding any of that stuff in light of these recalls, knowing that these are not the first that this has ever happened. This has been an ongoing problem for years.
So lessons just haven't been learned, have they?
I think lessons haven't been learned, and I think that there's good spin doctors out there who like to spin the tale that everything's okay now, you can go back to feeding this. And in fact, we've had people say, So when will it be safe again to feed the food? And my answer to that would be, it never was, so it never will be.
Yeah, yeah. Which for an ordinary owner is unnerving.
It is unnerving. And, mm-hmm. and probably because, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, because you're going to your veterinarian and they tell you to feed the certain kind of food.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this packaged food. And it should be okay. If my veterinarian says it's okay, it should be okay. But if they understood the training that many, and I don't know how it is in your country, but I do know here that their training is very minimal in nutrition. The ones who do know about nutrition have taken the initiative to learn it and then implement that in their practices.
Mm.
So, and most of those aren't selling packaged food.
Yes. So what are the alternatives then? If we don't want to buy, you know, this packaged commercially available food, what else can we do?
Well, there are, and I'll take you in steps here, but mm-hmm. there are commercial foods you can buy that are prepared, you know, raw foods that are prepared, but a lot of people might balk at that just because it's not something we're used to hearing.
Mm.
But you could do a home cooked diet. And my personal feeling about that is it's going to be far better than anything that they will ever get out of a bag. Unfortunately, what you will hear from the news media often and also from, even veterinarians is that it won't be balanced. So I think before we talk about how you do a cooked diet would be to talk about what that complete and balanced really means.
Yeah.
I use an analogy that if you're going to eat a bowl of Cheerios, you know, on the package it says it's balanced and complete. It's balanced and complete for that bowl of Cheerios, but it doesn't mean it's balanced and complete for every single meal for the rest of your life. And that's the equivalent of what we're feeding our pets when we give them that same good old handy brand of dog food or cat food in a bag. You're saying that bowl of Cheerios is good for every meal for the rest of their lives because it says balanced and complete on it. But balance comes over time with variety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get good health when we are eating, you know, our fruits and veggies and eating, you know, all of the things that our bodies need to thrive over time. That keeps your body healthy. But certainly you're not going to have balance in, I mean, a full, complete everything you need in every single meal.
That's
not practical. So the balanced and complete is a marketing term. So if people can grasp that, they'll understand that, you know, if you were to look to your dog's wild cousins, which are wolves, wolves eat a variety every time they eat. They don't eat every day necessarily, but they eat a variety, and our dogs need the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And yet we're steered away from that. You're quite right. We're steered away from it and sort of keep them on the same food and it's better for them and leave it alone.
Yeah, and we're told never, ever, ever feed scraps. And I have a veterinarian who comes on our show every month and he always says, I was even one of those proponents, never feed scraps. And he goes, and now I'm telling you, feed the scraps.
Mm.
Feed your leftover stuff to them. And understanding that a lot of what your veterinarians are told or taught is taught to them by the very profession that is selling you your pet food. So if you know that, you will understand why they're saying that, because it's what they're taught. So don't denigrate them. Just understand that that's what they were taught and that's what they believe. But if you really, you know, if people really care about the long-term health and well-being for their pets preventatively, and also that balance and complete again is over time, then you're going to you know, apply common sense. And first thing I would suggest is open their mouth and look at their teeth, and their teeth don't look anything like ours. They have sharp canines and sharp carnivorous teeth, and so feeding them a grain diet, a vegetable diet, isn't going to help them to thrive. They might survive, but you'll start to notice health problems cropping up around 5 and 6 years of age, and even sooner now. And some it's happening as young as 1 and 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And allergies are the first symptom of something going wrong in the body. So I think a lot of people run to the vet and they get an allergy shot.
Mm-hmm.
But allergies are to alert you that something's wrong. So I always ask people, what are you feeding? When they tell me, oh, my dog's got itchy skin, or, you know, this, it's always food. It's always go to the food first.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to, if you're concerned about a raw diet, certainly moving to a cooked diet is something to consider. And I hope to persuade people to look more seriously at a raw diet, but I do understand that people are going, horrors, horrors. that sounds gross. A cooked diet where you can mix in, you know, and of course, if you're going to feed vegetables, I don't feed my dog vegetables, but if you're going to, because you feel like you need to do that, the cooked would be better for them because their bodies have, your dog has a short intestinal tract that was designed to digest raw quickly and fast and move it through his body. We have these big, long intestines that have ridges in them, and theirs don't. Theirs are smoother. Our food needs time to digest and so forth. Theirs just kind of digest quickly. So they can't break down a vegetable matter the way we can. So if in a cooked diet, it's better. I think if you're going to give it to them, to give it to them cooked and mix in some meat. The one thing I would suggest is to not ever mix in cooked bones. Mm. Cooked bones are, the molecular structure of that bone has changed. The DNA of that bone has changed when you cook it, and it becomes brittle, and that's what can splinter off in your dog's intestines and so forth and cause the perforations and problems. So if you're going to give them bones, which I do, mine, I give them raw. And you can help keep their teeth clean and healthy and their calcium intake that they need and a whole lot of other minerals are in those raw bones and enzymes that are in those raw bones that they can eat. It's just a matter of what kind you feed. Really, if you're going to do a cooked diet, you just use your best judgment. And I don't feed a cooked diet, so it's not something that I, typically tell people. But you can feed them any kind of meat cooked with some veggies cooked, and your dog's going to really love you for it, and it will be balanced over time, just not in every meal.
Yeah, yeah. So we're looking to vary what we're cooking for them.
Varied, yeah. And, they actually like eggs. You can cook them up some eggs and you can cook them up, like I say, pureed vegetables and meat and just any kind of meat. I tell people, experiment with your own dog because every dog is as unique as we are. And not every dog is going to like everything. I had a dog before, my golden retriever. He loved anything and everything we set before him. But this one, no way. And I have a mastiff now, and he's just like, I think I'll pass on that. Thank you very much. Ooh. I'd rather have something else,
They are funny, aren't they?
Oh, they are. And he is, but we had to experiment and find out what he liked and what he didn't. And he pretty much sticks to certain things. And, like I say, every dog is different. So be willing to experiment with him. Whatever you're eating, if you're a meat eater, if you're eating that, your dog can eat that. So just remove the bones if they're cooked. Don't feed them cooked bones. And, I hear people say, when I tell them to feed chicken necks and backs raw, ooh, but I thought dogs weren't supposed to have that. No, not cooked. Raw, they can have them. Cooked, no, because those will definitely be a problem. And so just make sure you always... Whatever you do, you can keep it simple. I would keep it simple because a lot of people will say to me, that sounds really difficult to have to do, when I can just pour out, the simple thing from a bag. But if you're cooking meal for yourself, let's say you're cooking dinner, you could just as easily cook your dog's dinner at the same time and not make it any added burden for you. Personally, I think feeding a raw diet is the easiest because you don't have to do anything. You just take it out of the refrigerator and let it warm up to room temperature, or take it out of the freezer and defrost it and give it to them just like that.
Yeah, yeah. So the raw food, it's sort of just as it sounds. It literally is just raw food.
And
that's raw meat.
Raw meat and bones. And I usually tell people, Julie, I tell them feed this is not an exact science. You don't have to feed exactly. I have people writing down notes and wanting to measure everything, and I don't do that either. I know real hardcore raw feeders just kind of they'll feed a whole animal to their dog. I haven't gotten to that point where I can do that yet, but that's not his problem. It's mine. Mm-hmm. It's not my dog's problem. It's mine. They can because they are carnivores, and I know a lot of people say, no, they're omnivores. I don't want that to be the focus of your show today because that is challenging. I'll just say I differ. I beg to differ on that. So, yes, you can just give it to them. I give them You know, my dog's very fond of chicken necks and backs and turkey necks, loves those. Little dogs won't probably be able to eat the turkey necks because they're so big. But, yeah, you just feed it to them raw at room temperature, preferably, because you're trying to mimic something they would, you know, eat in the wild. So, and they're going to – everybody that I ever teach to do this, they'll go, wow, he really loves it. And I'll say, yeah, he's probably really happy. Some things that might concern people, they say – well, and I'm going to just address those before they, you know, because I know they're going to ask that. What about choking? Mm-hmm. And my answer to that is they can choke on a piece of kibble.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs can choke on a piece of kibble. They can choke on a toy. They can choke on just about anything, just like we can. They're going to be less likely to choke on something they were designed to eat than something they weren't. So when they eat kibble, they're not chewing, they're not crunching it, they're not ripping it, they're not tearing it. The way their teeth were designed, they're swallowing it whole. So they have more chance of choking on kibble, in my opinion.
I must admit, I too have dried food. And they virtually inhale it. It's just like wallop gum.
Yeah, they can't chew it because dogs don't chew. They don't have a grinding motion for their jaws or anything. So their jaws were designed to grab, prey, rip, tear, shred. And when they eat, they swallow chunks of meat whole. And they have a very, very high hydrochloric acid in their, you know, in their stomachs, much higher than ours. So it's going to digest it quicker, faster, and also take care of bacterial and parasitic concerns that people may have. Here's how I get around those things. First of all, you can freeze the meat for 24 hours to take care of any of your concerns about parasites or whatever. But understand that if your dog is raw fed, they have more chance of having a parasitic problem by being kibble fed, because their bodies aren't being fed what they need to thrive. So their immune systems are going to be weaker, and then you're going to have to use things like pesticide topical preventions for ticks and fleas. Most raw fed dogs don't have that problem. So you eliminate the flea and tick problem right away by a raw-fed dog because their immune system gets stronger, their body is being fed what they need, their blood becomes bitter and unappealing to the fleas and ticks and mosquitoes and so forth. Mm. I don't use any pesticide control on my dog at all.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so, and I know a lot of people who live in areas that are high, you know, tick and flea, my co-host for one thing, and she doesn't use any either and never has a problem because those fleas and ticks and mosquitoes are going to be drawn to a weakened animal. So you're going to have a problem if your pet is not being fed what they need to thrive, you know, so that will keep their immune system strong. You're always keeping them just a little bit sick when they're on kibble and all these, you know, over vaccinating and so forth and pesticide prevention medicines. So the diet takes care of a whole lot of problems.
Yes.
You know, it's naturally preventative. So also some really good side benefits. People might think, well, my dog needs to get a dental done every year. That dental, the biggest, you know, if they have dirty, smelly teeth and with plaque coming on them, that's very dangerous to their health because that will affect their kidneys and liver. Infected teeth and dirty teeth will affect their overall health altogether. And getting a dental done, they have to be put under anesthesia. So that anesthesia is going to be a problem, especially if you're doing that yearly. So there's a bigger risk in the anesthesia than feeding your dog a bone. So by feeding a raw diet, you're going to eliminate that problem. The teeth will be white. I mean, my veterinarian says, how old is your dog? His teeth are so white. Well, because he's fed meat and bones. And his teeth stay clean and white. I never have to do a dental. And it keeps his body healthy. Okay, so there's some other really funny benefits. Your dog should not have a doggy body odor. So bathing all the time isn't something that most, I know raw fed people who never bathe their dogs, they don't have to. Their coats are always clean. Their bodies are smell free. As a predator, it wouldn't be very wise for a predator to have a smelly body because they've got to catch prey. So that's part of their genetic makeup is to, if they're fed according to their species, they're not going to have a smelly body so that they can catch prey. So you won't have to do all the bathing and stuff. Another thing, so we've eliminated the tooth problem and the bathing problem. You're also going to notice one really great side benefit is that the poop goes from voluminous to tiny.
You converted me.
To the tiny, and here's the cool thing. The poop is not only not voluminous, it's tiny, and it's not smelly, horrendous, like big voluminous piles of poop are from a kibble-fed dog. And often it'll be white and powdery because of the bone matter in the from eating bone. And the bone goes in and it's absorbed into their body, assimilated, broken down, and digested, and it comes out powdery. And so if you've forgotten to pick up your poop for a day or two, it might just dissolve into the ground and you'll never know where it was.
Oh, wow.
So there are a lot of benefits to a raw diet, plus the fact that it's so easy. If you're buying your own groceries, you can pick up groceries for your dog and, eliminate that having to buy that big bag every time you go to the store. The thing that people might not understand is there are the biggest content in your bag food, whether it's a really high-end brand of dog food or just on sale junk that you picked up at the grocery store. They are primarily made up of grains and gluten and a whole lot of other stuff that dogs and cats were never meant nor designed to digest. They cannot. So that's why such big poop, and that's why, allergies, and that's why sick animals by the time they're 5 and 6 years old. A dog at 7 years should not be considered middle-aged, no matter what size. A giant breed should typically live to be, at least 15 years, if not 20. If they were raw fed, and if we're talking generations, because your dog now, it's never too late to start, but I wouldn't expect, all these extra years. My dog has lived extra years just because of the fact that he's raw fed. He's still running around like a puppy at 8 years, and he's a mastiff. He looks older. He's got gray and fur and everything, but he does not know he's old. And he would, if we'd have gotten him, Julie, when he was healthy and cared for properly, he was very abused. He was a rescue. If we had gotten him, and if his parents had been raw fed and his parents before him had been, he would be healthy. But, the thing is that people have to understand that generations of this has caused a lot of problems. And it's going to take generations to reverse it. But you can do your dog a favor and extend, his quality of life, if nothing else. By feeding a raw diet. Now, I'm sure there's going to be dissenters and there's going to be people who disagree. I, for one, have proof is in the pudding, and that is in my own dog. And in the people that I know who raw feed, and the magnificently beautiful shiny coats their dogs have, the white clean teeth, no smelly bodies, and certainly small poop.
I think there's something in there for everybody. Everybody's going to go, that's my dog's problem, and that could solve that. Whatever it is, whether he's got a smelly dog or, the teeth or, I mean, for me, smaller poo is brilliant, because we've got two big Labradors and another dog as well, and the amount of poo I have to go and pick up, so you've sold me on it now.
Well, and here's another benefit. I think a lot of people will notice that they have ear problems with their dogs, oily, greasy ears, and maybe even yeasty ears, and they have to go get medicines for it, or the dogs are scratching at it. Well, that's the grains in the diet that's coming from the kibble, so that problem will go away with a raw diet. One thing I would caution is if your dog is sick or elderly, to do a transition diet. And I mean by maybe starting, you can get them off the kibble immediately, but go to a cooked diet first and then transition them to raw so that their body has time to get strong and that the enzymes, their natural, enzymes that are part of a dog's makeup, DNA makeup, will kick in and get going, hey, I get to work again. And their jaws have to get used to doing what they're supposed to do again. Their jaws have been spoiled, and a lot of dogs will turn up their nose and going, I'm not eating that raw thing. Well, you've been feeding them McDonald's when you feed them kibble, and now you want them to eat their veggies, so to speak. Want them to eat their, it's like telling a child, you can't have a Happy Meal anymore. You must eat your vegetables and this nice meal I prepared for you. This is what you're telling your dog when you switch them. And they might balk at that. No, Mom, I want the Twinkies. I want the McDonald's, and so you can do tough love with them over, several days. They'll get hungry enough, and they will want to eat it, and they will never go back. Most people I talk to say, my dog didn't even hesitate. He just wanted this. And they never go back. In fact, very sold on the fact that they feed less, And it actually can be not cost prohibitive like it is buying very expensive so-called holistic bags of food. You can buy them. I mean, even feeding them a canned food is better than a bagged food, simply because I know a lot of people think, well, doesn't the crunching of the, keep their teeth clean? No. That's like, inviting them to have candy sticking to their teeth all day. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're seeing the problems with their teeth and with their overall health. And allergies are always the sign. They're always an alert that something is not healthy in the body. Mm-hmm. They're a symptom. They're not a disease and probably shouldn't be treated as a disease. They should be listened to and alerted. When people contact me and ask me, well, my dog is scratching all the time, and my first question is always and will always be, what are you feeding them? If they're feeding a raw diet, then there's something else to look into. And I definitely then would say, go to your veterinarian and get a checkup, get a diet, get a blood workup done. But if you're feeding kibble, I would say, well, I'd stop feeding the kibble and feed them something that they need to eat. So, and you will eliminate a lot of problems just by that. You will see a lot healthier, more energetic animals is also as a result.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you say sort of lots of dogs take to it enthusiastically. I remember one occasion quite early on with Bird, and that's our black Labrador, and it was my daughter's birthday party, so we thought, well, okay, we've got to occupy the dog and sort of keep him out of the way of the children, so we put him into the laundry with a bone. And he loved it, and that was great. And then when all the kids had gone home and we could let him back in, we opened the door, but we didn't want him to bring the bone in. And we said, no, leave the bone. You can come back to us now. And he just got the bone and ran into the garden. And he was like, you can get lost, you lot, because I just want the bone now.
Yeah. And there is a book out called Give Your Dog a Bone. Another person we've had on our show and that we refer people to is Dr. Tom Lonsdale. I'm not sure that the Royal Veterinary College is thrilled with him, but he is a proponent of raw feeding. And so he, he has had great success with even very sick and old animals that have been turned around and revived, if you will, by being fed a raw diet. So I'm a great proponent of it, and I was a skeptic, just like everybody else, because remember at the top of the show I said that I worked in traditional veterinary medicine. I was always one say, no, you must get these yearly shots and you must feed this kind of food. It must be the science food. It must be, for your dogs to be healthy. Although my own dog was not, even though I was doing all those things. And it took me just really, I'm one of those people that have, some people can be gently led and hear what you're saying, Julie, but I'm one of those that has to be hit over the head with a 2x4. It has to be something that really gets my attention, and it was my own dog, this one that I, the Mastiff that I have now. He was like, he was very skinny, like as I said, a malnourished. So we started just instinctively adding cooked meat to his kibble to help put some weight on him, and lo and behold, he started picking through all of the picking the meat out of the kibble and leaving the kibble.
Wow!
And he didn't. When there was no meat in it, he'd look at that like, I'm supposed to eat that as if. So eventually we got tired of throwing so much food out. And we even did the veggies in there with him, and he would pick the meat out of that too. So we just said, we're just going totally raw meat and bones. We're considered sarfers, not barfers. Barf is the biologically appropriate raw food. Mm-hmm. We feed species appropriate raw food, which is pretty much raw meat and bones. I tell people, keep it simple. You can feed in a 1-to-1 ratio of bone to meat, meaning as much bone as you give meat. So it's easy just to get. That's why I say chicken necks and turkey necks, because the bone and meat ratio in it is perfect. By nature, it's already built in. The bone and meat are equal. But you can feed just about any cut of meat. I steer away from things like weight-bearing bones, like legs and wings, because dogs could potentially choke on those, unless you're feeding. I've seen a Mastiff devour an entire chicken all by himself. Just handed him the whole chicken and he ate it. Yeah, so, but my dog is different. Every dog is different. I guess people just have to experiment. And you feed typically 2% to 3% of their body weight, of your dog's body weight. So if you have a 100-pound dog and you're going to feed them 2%, that's, it's simple math, right? 2% is just, maybe, Well, my dog's 130 pounds, and he eats probably, in the winter, up to 4 pounds in a day. Sometimes he eats nothing. You know, if they want to fast themselves, let them fast. They would do that in nature. So there are, I know a lot of people who raw feed who fast on purpose once a week. Their dogs, I just let my dog determine that for himself. There are days he'll skip a meal, you know, and skip his meal. So I just let him.
Yes.
And in the winter, he eats more, so we give him more because it's cold. And so, you know, in the summer, they eat less. It's hot, and they know that they're not expending as much energy, so let them do that. It's really, really simple. I mean, you just, you know, if you can do your little bit of math, just, you know, a little bitty dogs are nice. I know a lady that just feeds a little, you know, patty to her dog each day, a little tiny patty, and he's healthy and not hungry.
Yeah.
And then she gives him a little tiny bone. So that's what she feeds. But me, I have a great big one that needs to feed him. He eats no less than 2 pounds a day.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely sounds like the recipe for a happy, healthy dog, doesn't it?
It does, and it's easy. And I know, again, people are going to want to cook. You're still going to have to feed them that equivalent in the cook diet, which means you're going to have to feed more when you think about it, because you're going to have to cook it. And when you cook the meat down, it shrinks.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot easier if you just give it to them raw, and a lot less hassle for you. So it's just mostly getting people over the fear. Julie, there are some things they can do if they want to just really, if they want to be precautionary about the parasite or the bacteria. They can soak the meat, and I would just say for, you know, just spray it on, or maybe just even a 5-minute soak with some apple cider vinegar. Got to be the organic kind that still has the mother in it or the fungus in it. The raw apple cider vinegar, which will not only add some minerals to the diet, but it will also, you know, a lot of nutrients in that, but it will effectively do away with parasites. Or you can use grapefruit seed extract that will clean the meat and keep it nice. And make sure you just keep your hands washed and clean. I know a lot of vegetarians or vegans might not want to handle that. Unfortunately, our dogs are not vegan, so they need the meat.
Definitely.
Yeah, they do. But the other thing you could do, a lot of people, I don't know if you guys have this readily in the UK. I know we do here, and it's food-grade diatomaceous earth. And it's a food-grade thing you can sprinkle into their food, and it's a natural way to keep pests out of your gardens, out of your yards. And it will go in and keep parasites, any kind of parasites, out of the body too. So, but it must be food grade, not industrial grade. So I think most of the garden centers sell the industrial grade, but you can find food grade online just by doing a search.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things you can do to prevent, and really it's to keep your mind at peace more than your dogs. Because your dog knows, he'll go out and he'll bury a bone that's got meat on it and stuff, right? And it's stinky and nasty and gross, and they'll dig it up in a week and they'll eat it, no problem. But really, all of these precautions are for you, not necessarily your dog.
Yeah, yeah. No, really, the dog never looks at anything and goes, yuck, that's too horrible to eat, do they? They just don't do that.
They eat poop.
I know.
So how gross is that? You know, or they'll eat something rotten, right?
Yeah.
Because they're scavenger animals, so why... The concern is really our concern for humans, because, you know, we can't eat that stuff and we can't do that stuff because we would get sick. But their digestive tracts are quite different, and they were designed to handle that. As a scavenger, predator, animal, their bodies, and as a side note, the DNA of a dog and a wolf are nearly identical, unless you're an extreme expert. Even some experts can't discern the difference. So knowing that, I ask people, what do wolves eat? Oh, they eat other animals. Well, why would it be different for your dog? And bottom line, that's the answer. Why would it be different for your dog?
It's a good question, isn't it? Certainly a lot of what Kim said made me think of our visit to the wolf sanctuary and the way the wolves' health benefited from their natural feeding. Sounds like there are so many advantages to raw food. And if you'd like to find out more, you can listen to Kim Bloomer on her show Animal Talk Naturally at animaltalknaturally.com. And you can find that site via the link on the Dogcast Radio site. Our dog chases people on a bike. We've had to take it off him. Winston Churchill. Now we have 2-Minute Fiction, written by Chandra Miller. Chandra has a very interesting blog you might like to explore. It's called Living Mindfully, and her own dog, Marley, a gorgeous black standard poodle, features in it regularly. To find out more about Chandra, follow the links on the Dogcast Radio site. Chandra has written a great story for us, but do keep a Kleenex handy. So now, 2-minute fiction, Leaving Ginger, written and read by Chandra Miller.
She calls us Red and Shaggy, and we don't mind a bit. Our names are Jessie and Duchess, but Red and Shaggy work just as well. It's not like we hear our names that often anymore. We can't even remember the last time one of our people said something more than git or no or my pants. When they come out the back door, they go straight down the path to the garage. We always dash over to see them. Duchess, arthritic as she is, practically bends her body in half as she wags, while I leap around like a kid. But they brush us aside and mutter about how muddy we are and how stinky. We call her Ginger on account of her gingery smell. She calls us by the wrong names, but we always know she means us. She is not like our people. Every morning about this time, Ginger walks by our house. We can see her from the gate, but we smell her and her puppy long before she gets near enough to see. Her gingery scent is mellow as an old mushroom, and his is all cedar and new grass. Much as we yearn for a roll in grass ourselves, hers is the scent we really like. When she comes, her brown puppy is always jumping at the end of the leash. He sees us before she does. I can't help it. I let loose with some high whining barks at the sight of her. Duchess doesn't pretend to be shy anymore. She always comes out from under the deck to watch them go by. Hey, Red, hey, Shaggy, Ginger will call out from across the street. Her puppy, a sprightly prick-eared thing with hardly any fur and a nub for a tail, yips back at us and tries his best to tug her over. No, baby, this way, she says to him in that quiet way she has. She herds him away. Within a minute, he's forgotten us and lunges for some sparrows on the sidewalk ahead. When they're out of sight, we rush to the back gate so we can see them come into view when they round the corner. Sometimes that's the closest they get. If we're lucky, they might come down the alley later to see us. But first, we have to endure watching her play with him in the empty fenced-in field beyond the alley. She brings toys of all sorts. Tennis balls, a big hollow ball with goodies inside, a cylindrical thing with knobs on either end. We can hardly stand to watch as that stupid puppy chases after these trinkets. After her second or third toss, he loses interest and starts sniffing around or chewing on sticks. She's left to race around collecting the toys for him and trying to entice him to run after her. Sometimes she hides behind a tree when he's otherwise occupied, and then she calls out, "Copper, find me!" And if he can tear himself away from his dumb sticks, he'll sprint over to see her. When he comes around the tree, she runs so he can chase her. She passes him little tidbits from her pocket. After a while, he flings himself down on the grass and rolls around, twisting and kicking his legs madly. She sits with him and watches him and laughs, sometimes reaching over to rub his chest. I don't know about Duchess, but by this point, my own chest is always aching deep inside. After all this, if we're lucky, on their way home they might appear at the back of our yard, coming down the alley. The first time that happened, I was so overjoyed I heaved myself at the chain-link gate, spraying mud all over Ginger's face and jacket as my paws hit the rail. She stepped back, and I knew I'd blown it, but she was laughing a little, wiping her face with her sleeve. Then I could feel pity coming off her, and a kind of heat. As she took in the churned-up mud of the yard, her smile turned to a hard line. She shook her head and clucked her tongue as she massaged the side of my face with her hand. I was transported, leaning into her touch over the gate, a helpless grin on my face. But then that stupid copper started dancing and crying, and they had to leave. He's an annoying little squirt, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't think he likes to share. Since then, Ginger keeps Copper on a short leash and approaches with excruciating slowness. Copper has to walk calmly without pulling, or else she turns and leaves. They get quite close, with the leash sagging between them, but then he forges ahead, and the minute the leash goes taut, they turn away. I hate it. By the time they get to us, I'm almost as frustrated as Copper, but I don't show it. I ignore him and focus all my longing on her, even as she says things that don't make sense, like, "What a good training partner you are, Red," and, "He's getting better, don't you think, old Red?" Then, within seconds, it seems, she's turning to go, because that ninny Copper, with his flea-like attention span, is again kicking up a ruckus. Once, he even yanked himself free of his collar by bracing his legs and pulling backward against the leash. Then he ran up and down the alley, exploring all its weedy edges while Ginger hollered. It was the only time I've ever heard her raise her voice, and I smelled her panic. It smelled caustic, like the radish the kids tried to feed me once. He tore around, completely oblivious, and a couple times he bounced over to me. I touched his nose with mine through the fence and tried to calm him so he'd let himself be caught, but he waggled and pounced away just as Ginger came near. After he exhausted his adventure, he finally ran up to her all a-wiggle and still goggling at everything, as if he didn't even care how much he scared her. She grabbed him and held him tight against her under one arm while unbuckling and rebuckling his green collar, cinching it up. After she tugged the collar back over his head, they set off without a backward glance. I don't know what's keeping her today. It's way past time. Come to think of it, I don't know when I saw her last. She comes every day, but not today, and not... It's hard for me to keep these things straight, but I'm pretty sure it's been a very long time since Ginger and Copper walked down the street. It's nearly dark, and the kids are home from school, as usual running in the front door without even looking at us as we crowd the gate for a glimpse of them, when I smell her. This isn't right. She doesn't come by unless the sun is high. And even more wrong, there's no cedary, grassy puppy smell accompanying her. Instead, something different clings about her usual gingery tang. It's a bad smell, both charred and sodden. Finally, I see her, but at first I don't believe it's Ginger. Her silhouette is all wrong. Her head is down, and her shoulders are bunched up under her jacket. She's moving way too slowly, and she's alone. I try to keep it in, but a little moan escapes from my throat. She hears and lifts her head to look at us and gives the merest nod of acknowledgement. Then I make out her usual, "Hey, Red, hey, Shaggy," in a tiny cracked voice I've never heard before. She shambles up the sidewalk and turns the corner, and before long we see her in the field. She's turning to look at everything, picking at the grass, putting her hand on a tree. She slumps to the ground and puts her hands over her eyes. I hear mewling sounds like the ones my littermates and I used to make a long time ago. After a while, she rubs the back of her hand across her eyes and stands. The slanting sunshine turns her hair to fire. She pulls something from her pocket, but it's not a toy or a treat. It's a gray box. The smoky smell burns my nostrils when she opens the lid. She tosses the contents high into the air in front of her, and a shimmering gray curtain falls to earth. When she comes to the back gate, I smile and stretch in greeting, but she still doesn't act right or smell right. She's sniffling, gripping the rail, not even looking at me. I put my paws up on the gate so she can't miss me, and push my nose into her face to explore the source of the salty smell. It's impertinent, and my own people would surely give me a shove, but she puts both hands on the deep fur of my ruff, sinking her fingers in, and presses her face against mine. Oh, Red, Copper loved you so. Copper? Never mind about Copper. I bet I haven't been this close to a human face since I was very young myself. I'm glad Duchess's hips are too old to launch herself up here. Not that she would, being on the skittish side since that bad kick to the ribs her first year. I, on the other hand, have never lost faith. I lean into Ginger. She gulps and says something about Copper slipping his collar again, running in traffic. She's weeping into my neck now, still clutching my thick fur. My own hips aren't the strongest, and I don't know how long I can stay standing on my hind legs. They start to shake, then they go numb, but I ignore them. Finally, she pulls away, and I drop down to all fours, already missing her face. She bends down and squeezes her fingers through the chain link to pat my head. She tells me more rubbish about Copper, who, as far as I can tell, is a complete fool for leaving her.
And that was Leaving Ginger, written and read by Chandra Miller. Some of my best leading men have been dogs and horses. Elizabeth Taylor. We're concentrating on food this time, and there's a great new dog food out in the UK. OrganiPets is producing organic pet food, and it gets better because the packaging is environmentally friendly, so it's good all round. We spoke to Liz Nuttall, Managing Director of OrganiPets, about the inspiration behind it all.
Our dog, Raffi, is a rescue dog, and my mum initially rescued her. Mum couldn't look after her any longer, so we had her. About 4 years ago, she was diagnosed with cancer and given 6 months to live. And we thought, well, however long she's got, we want to make sure it's a good quality of life. So I started making her organic food at home. And she went into remission, and the vets were scratching their heads. They couldn't quite understand what happened, because they hadn't heard of this happening before. And I said, I don't really know. We feed her good stuff. We take her for good exercise. And he said, no, I think it's probably the food. You should start your own business. So I did.
Excellent. And how long ago was that?
We launched in April.
Yeah.
So it's very, very new.
Yeah. But Raffi is still well. And
still in remission, yeah. She's in remission.
That is a wonderful, testament to your food, isn't it?
Yeah, we're really excited about it. And that's why we make sure that all our food is good enough to pass the Raffi test. And if she likes it and we know it's got good enough ingredients, then that's what we do.
So sort of is it one variety or one
at the moment flavor? We have adult dog in chicken, rice and herbs, adult cat chicken and rice, and dog treats. But we're going to later next year we'll roll out the range, and we'll have for senior kitten, puppy and light. And hopefully do a different flavour as well.
Yeah. And you've been picked up by a UK supermarket, haven't you?
Yes, we're going to be in Waitrose in October.
Oh, brilliant. So it's all happening for you?
It is. It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. We're just being inundated with orders. And our house looks like a warehouse at the moment. Even our spare room is full of dog and cat food.
It must smell wonderful to Raffi.
It feels like Christmas every day, I think, for her.
Yeah. What feedback have you had from owners who have used your food?
We're getting amazing feedback. We've got one owner whose cat's always had a heart condition, and she moved over to OrganiPets about 4 months ago. She took her cat to the vet a couple of weeks ago, and it's 99.9% disappeared, this condition.
Wow.
And the vet puts it down to the food.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. So we're talking to the vet.
Yeah.
And at the kennels where we obviously test before we go to market, I got a call one day saying she thought she was seeing behavioural changes with the dogs. And just like kids go psycho with additives, she said she felt that the dogs had become calmer.
Yeah.
Because there's no additives in the food at all.
Yeah.
So
we're
really excited.
Oh, so it's benefiting sort of physically and mentally.
No, it's really good. I mean, I truly believe that what you eat is what you put in is what you get out of it, and it's the same for your pets, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
So so it's good stuff.
Can you order it online?
Yep, you can. www.organipets.co.uk.
What a marvellous success story. Some other dog food manufacturers we have spoken to started because they were driven by the need to find a food that fitted their pets' health needs. And it works so well then because it comes from a genuine place. There's a link on the Dogcast Radio site to OrganiPets, and that interview was recorded at the Train and Behave finale, which was a wonderful day, and we'll be bringing you more interviews from the event in our next episode. I think animal testing is a terrible idea. They get all nervous and give the wrong answers. Peter Kay. If you're not quite brave enough to jump straight to raw feeding, but would like to explore the area of healthy dog nutrition, we have linked to some relevant websites. Understanding food labels on human food can be difficult enough, so how are we supposed to fathom out those on our dog's food? Well, I found a site to help you do just that. PetFoodReport.com is a consumer's guide to pet food. This site will take you through what the terms on the food packaging mean and also has an interactive feature for extra clarification. The Burns range of pet food emphasises the importance of healthy natural ingredients, and their site, burns-pet-nutrition.co.uk, also offers a recipe for you to try your hand at being your dog's chef. The site has loads of useful information, as well as a very helpful FAQ section. If you'd like to discover how the nutritional needs of each breed varies, check out the Animal Advocate site. And if you'd like to offer your dog organic treats, then check out naturenosh.com. The latest update on Jill's imprisoned poodles is that they have now been locked up for over 65 days, with no real prospect of going home anytime soon. Jill has worked out that this is the equivalent of a human spending over a year in prison. Imagine that, being imprisoned for over a year with no solid evidence, no trial, no chance to clear your name, no visiting rights, no rights at all, apparently. It's shocking and shaming that this has happened in the UK in 2007. We'll keep you posted on this sad subject. To round off today's show, I have a delightful story that a listener spotted in a magazine and sent in. In Seattle, America, Debbie Cantlin, who rescues wildlife, took in an orphaned three-day-old squirrel and called him Finnegan. Debbie had enough on her plate, really, as her dog Maddie was close to giving birth. Maddie came up with her own solution, though, as she adopted the tiny squirrel and raised him alongside her own pups. Happily, Finnegan has now returned to the wild, thanks to his doggy foster mum's loving care. Lovely, isn't it? Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
A woman saw an ad in the local newspaper which read, "Pure Bred Police Dog, $25. Thinking that to be a great bargain, she called and ordered the dog to be delivered. The next day, a van arrived at her home and delivered the mangiest looking mongrel she had ever seen. In rage, she telephoned the man who had placed the ad. "How dare you call that mangy mutt a purebred police dog? Don't let his looks deceive you, ma'am," the man replied. "He's working undercover."